Are you an insider? Subscribe to FC Insiders today to receive full unedited interviews, news, rumors, exclusive content, and more. Join FC Insiders at futurecommerce.fm.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Their software enables truly personalized one-to-one interactions between marketers and customers across all channels. They help you build loyalty and enrich the customer journey while increasing your revenue. Go to emarsys.com/futurecommerce to request a demo and see for yourself how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce. Hello and welcome to Future Commerce, a podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
I'm Brian.
And I've got a lot of background noise today because I'm in the middle of community. I'm sitting in...
What are you going to talk about today?
I'm going to talk about community today.
Big half-baked idea of the day.
Yeah, the ginormous global overarching theme that's half-baked, which is basically could be the subtitle of our podcast. Actually, you know what? I'm so proud of our last few episodes because we are saying things that... I mean, like, I don't know. We're saying things and we're talking about things that... They're not being talked about. I don't think
some of them
while
are.
While everyone's chasing, you know, headlines, and everyone's distracted by this earnings report and that acquisition and this IPO, you know, we're actually talking, we're creating content that I feel like is somewhat evergreen in that it's important and they're broader topics and they're not so much bound to news and you could consume this at any time. And I feel like that's really important and differential for us. So I don't know. I'm really loving sort of the theme of where Future Commerce is right now.
Yeah. When you say evergreen, I mean,
nothing's really evergreen.
Yeah. Right. Like the pace of innovation as we briefly saw in Mary Meeker's report, this past week, which we will unpack. Talk about that next time. A lot of stuff that we've been talking about for a while, which is great. Evergreen now is like, what, a year?
Yeah, if that. I mean, some of our content has aged better than others.
That's true.
If you go back to like our first few episodes, like there's a few that are still very listenable, and there's a couple that are talking about like a WWDC of 3 years ago that have no bearing on, you know, our current trajectory, right? So I feel like what we're talking about though in generalities, like if you talk about experiential retail, sommeliers of retail, manufactured scarcity, secondhand commerce, ultra personalization, consumer predestination,
my favorite,
unchecked inflation, having retail renaissance, secondhand commerce, these are things that even if you go back to like deep fakes and artificial intelligence as a weapon, like those are themes that, I don't know, we're just glad handing ourselves at this point. Like we can move on. If you're new to the show, I really want to encourage you to go back and listen to the first, you know, the last few episodes, because I feel like from a thematic and content perspective, we're using news, current events and news as like a jumping off point to talk about more overarching and broad topics. And today I really want to talk about how community impacts the world around us, how we sort of as humans self-organize into communities of like-mindedness, and that's important as retailers.
First, let's hit on some headlines.
Please. Yeah, no. We always do. We always do. Go ahead.
We always do. That's true. It was an interesting thing. Adidas, right? According to an article on Hypebeast,
you're using the one that I linked, but it was broad industry news from
This is what happens when Philip goes down this road. Now all of our content's just going to be derived from Hypebeast.
Yeah, that's what's happening to me. I'm becoming a baby Hypebeast. Branzy, Cantor Millard, Millard Brown, and an ISPO report basically say that Adidas is one of the world's most valuable, 100 most valuable brands, which means it's now in, you know, among the likes of Apple and Amazon and Nike and all the rest, which is interesting because Nike at 29th place, you know, if you are like me and your ear to the ground is in the shoe world, people that are, you know, very, very footwear conscious might tell you that Adidas is has way more mind share at this point than Nike, but Nike is infinitely more valuable of a brand, and has, you know, has a lot more, you know, really is doing what footwear, you know, is, they are setting the bar for where footwear should be. It just, Adidas has a lot of mind share right now, but it's interesting. This is very interesting for me. And we've had some Adidas folks on the show in the past, which is kind of an interesting thing.
I think, yeah, Nick Vu, and yeah, that was a great episode. Actually, that, if you talk about episodes to go back and listen to, I would highly recommend going back and listening to the Nick Vu episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, I think what's interesting is, and this is not a knock on Adidas, and I don't think they should be, I don't think they should be worried about this. But if you go back 50 years and you look at what we consider the most valuable brands 50 years ago, there's a lot of them that don't even exist anymore, right?
Yeah.
Or nominally exist.
Yeah, I saw a tweet recently that that sort of compared the 100 most valuable brands of 50 years ago to today. And, you know, not only do almost none of the brands in the left column from 50 years ago even exist anymore, but most of them, you know, are in industries that almost don't exist anymore, right? Or have evolved so dramatically they don't really even make the same products right? So they're like incredible paradigm shifts. You know, the JCPenney's of, or the Penney's of 50 years ago aren't really the same company anymore. Interesting, right?
Penney's, which kind of reminds me of Sears and Kmart.
Yeah, they just closed a bunch of stores, which...
Not news. I feel like this is...
It's not
like,
news.
I feel like this always hits headlines and I'm like... Every year for the past 15 years, I feel like there's been like a headline like at least once a year, maybe like once a quarter. Sears and Kmart closed stores, closed like, you know, 50 stores or something like that. And I just don't know how they had so many stores. Like, it just feels like they have infinite stores to close. They never stop closing stores.
Well, you know what was it Alec Baldwin said in the movie? Always be closing. They took it literally. That's
the ABCs of
yeah,
Kmart and
retail.
Sears.
Yeah, the ABCs of a tentpole, you know, mall retail space is always be closing.
Which I saw an article that tried to like show this as evidence of the continued retail apocalypse. And I mean, let's face it, this has nothing to do with the retail apocalypse. Like,
no, it is its own thing. I'm impressed that they still have stores left to close.
It's like. The curve that it approaches zero but never hits it. It just keeps
asymptote.
Yes, exactly.
The tangent that approaches an asymptote.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that's some pretty interesting stuff there. So yeah, just coming back to Adidas. What I would like to say though is that to be a valuable brand, not only do you have to have incredible innovation. And that's something that we had touched on again in our interview with Nick Vu, which is it's not just product innovation, it's also experiential innovation. And the way that they're engaging customers is fully 100%, 180 degrees different. So in preparation for this episode today, let's call it brand research, I installed the Adidas app. And I'll tell you my experience with their native app on Android is absolutely 100% different than the Nike experience. If you're comparing the two, there is no comparison, because Adidas actually feels like, you know, an experience I could only have in a native app, whereas the Nike experience is basically a window into their website.
It's a responsive website on
right.
download. Yeah.
Right. And you know what shoved me over to Adidas today is that I tried to buy today's 10 a.m. drop on a Nike shoe, and I couldn't get it because it was sold out and out of stock in 31 seconds.
Yeah, you just entered the world of shoes, dude. Like,
yeah, I know. But I want to point out that, you know, there was a pair that I was keeping my eyes on over at Adidas, and it pushed me into a competitive brand to sort of get the same experience. And then I realized, wow, Adidas actually understands customer engagement. So like in a totally different way, they're doing it differently. And I don't know. It just appeals to me in a different way. And it's interesting to say that they didn't take their mobile app as a, let's create a gated experience so that we don't, you know, have bots purchasing our shoes and we have to authenticate these are real people that are buying, you know, real products. But instead they said, what if we engage this in like the language of native apps that can only be expressed in a native app, and let's do it in a way that sort of doesn't replicate every feature that you've ever seen on a website, but actually approaches this as, what if it's a different type of a buying experience? And that is different.
I mean,
and that's how you become 100 most valuable brands, not just ubiquity.
Yes.
It's thinking about the customer experience in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I would argue that that's how everyone should be thinking about their mobile app. It shouldn't just be a responsive website. I mean, it's a completely different medium. And so, I mean, things are going to change too, as the, you know, with the rise of progressive web apps, on the horizon, at least, you know, maybe websites and apps will start to see a little bit more mirroring in how they and how things work. But the thing is that there's always going to be a unique experience that you can create for your customers. That's a downloadable experience, I think. And so I shouldn't say always. That's a dangerous word. I think you're right. Adidas is thinking about their market differently than Nike is. And they had to. That's the other thing. Like, if they just copied everything Nike did, which, and dare I speak with out of ignorance, but I think they kind of did for a while.
They did.
Yeah.
Well, right.
Right. I think they're like...
And they still are.
Yeah,
they still are
to some degree. But like, that strategy can only get you so far. It doesn't get you on the top 100 most valuable brands list. And so, well done, Adidas.
It's funny too, because they're staying top of mind in sort of interesting ways. Listen, we could probably go on and on about this. I'm sure people are tired of hearing me talk about footwear. I am writing an ebook about the challenges of selling footwear online, which is part of why I have my mind is so deep into this world. But I think that's something that is generally accessible to a lot of people. And the fact that Adidas really kind of cornered the market in a couple really interesting ways, in that they didn't only approach partnerships. Like, Nike has had sponsorships down for decades. Look at Jordan as its own line. Look at like those sponsorships and sort of their own design aesthetic following in like a certain into its own like sub brands. Nike's been doing that forever. So it wasn't when Adidas did it, they looked at it differently. They said, how can we do this differently? And a Kanye West, like ostensibly a Kanye West partnership, doesn't make a lot of sense on paper for an athletic footwear brand, but it has changed, fundamentally changed. The Yeezy brand has fundamentally changed footwear so dramatically that the design aesthetics of the Yeezy shoes are in everything now.
Dude, you
like everybody copies.
You sound like Kanye right now.
Well, God help me. Okay. But the point is that this is now a topic of conversation, in that, you know, people, and I'm not saying that rappers never had, you know, partnerships with footwear brands. That's always been part of, you know, the hip hop persona. I mean, you know, for crying out loud, that has always been part of hip hop. The point for me is that actually launching, like changing an entire industry based on a partnership and an aesthetic that comes out of it is something that doesn't happen all the time. And so you got to sit up and notice when it does. And if you look at the design cues that a lot of the bespoke brands are following nowadays, like Allbirds, who are sort of a darling of direct to consumer right now. By the way, they're in Nordstrom, hashtag omnichannel. Those guys, you know, they look a lot like Yeezys. They just do. And not a lot of people were doing that design 5 years ago. And in fact, they're ramping up production now, where Yeezy started out as an exclusive that were really hard to get and very expensive and sort of artificially limited, and sort of a luxury good. And now they're producing, the news is that you're going to be producing 2 million of them. Like, this is going to become a massive consumer brand.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it already has. It's interesting. I do want to point something out. I think that other brands have tried to do what Adidas did. I don't want to just say, oh yeah, go, like, if you're a brand, go look outside sort of the standard type of sponsorship or the standard way of thinking, and just go, you know, get someone from another industry or like, I'm not saying don't be creative, but be careful about how you do it. And I am a Kanye fan. I think he does think outside the box. I think he was the right artist to partner with.
Right.
And so I think this is the other thing. When you're going to do things like this, and you're really getting outside the box, and you're trying to take your brand to another level, or get outside of just copying your competitor, make sure where you go, you're getting the right group or person. You're thinking of, Kanye is a phenomenal content creator. And so it was the right kind of play. They didn't go partner with Pharrell. Like, that would have failed.
Well, Adidas is partnered with Pharrell now. I'm actually wearing Pharrell
now. Yeah. But like,
no, I know. Right.
If that had been the first one they partnered with, it wouldn't have worked.
Right. But Pharrell, you know, you're now verging on the thing that I really wanted to talk about, which is access into communities. Yes. I mean, that's really what it is that Pharrell doesn't have the community that Kanye West does. There was a community, a natural community that Kanye was fostering, and a following of people that they had access into with that partnership. And I feel like creating communities is really what partnerships should be about, is access into, you know, into like a joined access or a joined shared experience of community that you can express through a partnership that you wouldn't reach otherwise.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries for every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll. Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com, and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Powered by artificial intelligence, the Emarsys marketing platform enables truly personalized interactions between marketers and customers across all channels, building loyalty, enriching the customer journey, and increasing your revenue. Each day, Emarsys connects more than 2,200 brands with 3.2 billion customers all over the world. Emarsys delivers over 350 million personalized interactions across email, mobile, social, and web. To learn more about how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions and actions, visit emarsys.com/futurecommerce and request your demo today. That's Emarsys, EMARSYS.com/futurecommerce.
Let's be really bold here. I'm so tired of us talking about things like called like markets.
Right, right.
Let's talk about communities now. Like, why are we continuing to use terms that were invented by, you know, by business people back in the 60s to address things that, you know, that
the 1860s, right?
Yeah, right. Like, marketing as a concept, like as modern marketing today, yeah, kind of took off in the 50s, right? Yeah. 50s, 60s, maybe earlier than that. Maybe I'm showing my ignorance here, but like, my point is, we're using terms and we're using techniques and we're using thought processes that were developed a long time ago.
There's a vernacular or a taxonomy that we've adopted that actually kind of it cheapens the evolutionary human trait of community building.
Exactly.
Right. So actually, this is the thing that piqued my interest here was there was a news article about Reddit becoming the number three most visited site in the United States outside of Google and Amazon. And I started thinking about what that means and how they could overtake Facebook and how loosely organized their communities are compared to, you know, the brand cachet of something like Facebook, where lots of people are drawn to Facebook to engage with Facebook itself or to engage with their, you know, their social circle. But they see that as a Facebook engagement, a Facebook experience, whereas Reddit, those communities actually see themselves as communities and they're not engaging with Reddit. They're engaging with each other. I feel like that's really interesting. It got me thinking about how in commerce we do the same thing and we have for a long, long time. In the analog business world, we've had leagues of businesses and, you know, and chambers of commerce and ways for people to have shared ideas and shared experience, shared spaces, marketplaces, right? We've had those contexts for a long time and we're recreating them block by block in a digital space. So I wanted to unpack that a little bit about how we sort of tend to self-organize as humans and how commerce can be furthered by, you know, sense of community.
Yeah, I think this is a really big idea. We've touched on it a little bit before. And we're both coming out of a very strong community, right? Like the Magento community, you know, is where we have our roots. And the Magento community is a really, really like passionate community. So yeah. I think we've been able to see the effect of a passionate community on a company, on a series of companies, on like it has like this, you know, spiraling outward effect, right? Like communities that are passionate have an effect on so much more than just themselves. And so what does that mean for commerce, right? And I think this is our big sort of half-baked idea of the episode. Let's riff on this for a couple minutes at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the idea. So I sorry, go ahead.
No. So you know, I think as digital commerce marketers and you know, and as you know, as merchants looking to figure out where we should head next with our technology and with our you know, with our dollars, I think now the play isn't necessarily betting on the strength of a business just because of its dollars that are behind it necessarily. It's betting on the businesses and the places where there are big communities, right? Like strength of community is actually a better measure of success than of dollar figure behind something.
Yeah, 100%. But to be honest with you, if you're let's go back 15 years or more, and if you look at Red Hat, community building can be an incredibly lucrative financial upside, right? Having a community that's passionate about a product or support of a product, it, especially in the open source world, can have incredible business benefit. Enterprise Linux is ubiquitous. In fact, Amazon Web Services wouldn't exist without it.
Right.
Right. Without Linux. And so there are outgrowths of ubiquity in the things that come out of community. I think from a retail perspective, if you even look at, think back about a couple of the security issues that we've had that have been, you know, major headline news. Almost all of them are because they're e-commerce or digital security concerns that are outgrowths of issues in pervasive, widely adopted open source projects. So there was the Heartbleed issue a couple years ago. Heartbleed, you know, effectively, and there's more than just Heartbleed, but you know, that's a really good example. It's because there was a pervasive issue in a package called OpenSSL, which is in everything. It's in every MacBook has an OpenSSL package in it. Every website that you transact with, if it's a secure connection, is running OpenSSL, and so it's so pervasive, and that community building has a real commerce impact. So it's not just about partnerships and community and how we sell products. It's the foundations, the plumbing, the infrastructure on which we're building is itself built on community.
Correct.
Whether you're intentionally have done that or not.
Yeah. A lot of what we've done on the web is, I would almost say the web does not exist without communities. It does not exist.
Right. It's interesting how it goes in cycles too, because I think the early adopters of the web self-organized into communities that were enthusiastic about it. Think about the old BBSs, right? Were you around in those days for bulletin boards?
I was like 10.
Okay. And so I'm not that much older than you, but I remember those dial-up BBS services.
That's the thing. Like things came through quickly, right? Like,
yeah.
5 years later, after I was, you know, when I was 15.
And it's funny. There was a company who sort of came through the 90s, and there's this great story that I'd have to dig up a little bit. But there's this company called X&O Communications, which was like a fiber backbone company, but they got their start. Their founder a number of years ago was a fan of BBS, like bulletin boards, and worked for Payless Shoes. So the story goes. While he was working as a retail, you know, as a retail a salesperson at a Payless Shoes, developed this idea that, man, it would be so much easier if I could put some of this dial-up equipment for my local BBS into a utility closet and not at my house. So he went around to all the Payless Shoes and started a business in installing like BBS dial-up access into Payless Shoes, and from there actually grew a public company. But for him, it was just out of a passion of wanting to community build. And in his context, you know, his retail context, he was using his access into unused space and leasing space. And I feel like that's an innovative use of retail space, something we all probably understand more to this day. But for him, it was about building community, not building a public company. And that grew into one of the largest fiber backbones in the United States that, you know, that Google and Microsoft and a lot of others through the 90s and early aughts, leased a lot of bandwidth from, which is huge.
Right. Right. I think, as businesses go to look at, you know, social, right. We talk about social, like it's this thing, right. If you're approaching social, like you need to, you know, figure out how to make something go viral or be responsive to things. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be responsive, and I'm not saying getting viral isn't a good thing. Those are all good things. But a sustainable social strategy has everything to do with communities, right?
Yeah.
So, I think what we're getting at here is, communities play into almost everything that we do as businesses. If you don't have a strategy without thinking about communities is a failed strategy. Even if you look at like logistics and like supply chain, and if you're not thinking about how what you're doing has an effect on communities that are providing these goods to you and and I maybe not logistics, but like at least supply chain and where you're sourcing things from, you're not going to have a sustainable strategy in the long term. Maybe you'll see some short term success, but I think it's been proven over and over, you know, if you're putting too much of a burden on any given community, you're not going to be able to sustain it. So,
go ahead. Let me ask you this then. What are some concrete ways of actually, you know, healthily engaging and trying to foster creations of communities?
First of all, you actually have to understand what they care about, and you probably should care about it too. Or if you don't personally care about it, you should probably find someone that does. So engaging communities has a lot to, I think empathy is a good starting point. you know what we should do, Philip? I think this would be really amazing. We should have someone on who is a real community builder. Like, like I'm thinking like a, you know, a Sherry Rohde or someone, who we know that's done a very, very good job of encouraging community, and thinking about community and building community. And maybe talk about like, it doesn't have to be necessarily commerce focused, but somebody that we could have sort of like talk about how it could impact commerce more.
I think one of the anti-patterns for building community though is when you try to control it.
Yes.
Right. When you're trying to control the message, when you're trying to control the conversation, you've already lost. You've lost the community. Like the community should be the one guiding that conversation and you should be open to listen. So as a retailer.
So listening. That's like
right. I think that's gets key, right? Right. My concern would be that a retailer takes away the they walk away and say, I need to create a Facebook group where people can chat. Or I need to ask, you know, send a survey and ask my customers what it is they like about my products. I think the right way to community build is to give people an opportunity to get together. I had a podcast, a live podcast at Pond City Market in a modern day marketplace called Citizen Supply, in cooperation with MailChimp. And if you want to listen to that, it's over at podcast.somethingdigital.com. And, we had three retailers who are community builders, and they're people who you would never expect that would be community builders. This one company is called King of Pops. They make popsicles, right? But their strategy for evangelizing their brand and for selling is not just to be in Whole Foods. That's one part of their strategy. But part of their strategy is they're going to be at every single music event in Atlanta that happens in 2018. So they're going to have carts out there and people will congregate around their carts and eat their popsicles and have opportunities to meet each other. But they're using popsicles as one vehicle to create an opportunity for people to share moments together. And I think we as retailers have to think like that. Mm-hmm. What can we do with our product to create opportunity for people to meet each other and have genuine conversation?
So that means being at places where people are gathering or creating opportunities for them to gather. I think both are important.
Yeah. And that's it too. Or at least some shared point of reference. So another person on that panel was a guy named Chuck Reese, who was from a journalistic like a blog called Bitter Southerner, where it's basically like a journalistic entity. They write opinion pieces, and you know the way they engage in commerce is through T-shirts and that sort of various, you know, brand affinity sort of apparel. But Bitter Southerner has attracted sort of the millennial, you know, bitter person from the Deep South who's kind of tired of being a caricature with a weird Southern accent, that they have real thoughts and opinions, and they, you know, they're associating with the Bitter Southerner brand as a voice that's giving them a voice to say that, you know, we're being portrayed in a way that's, you know, antithetical to our actual values. And I think that's really interesting, because when you wear a T-shirt that says I affiliate with this Bitter Southerner brand, you're saying something about yourself and it creates more conversation opportunity. So think about that, right? Think about the context that your brand brings. It's not just about, you know, I'm Adidas and I wear Yeezys. It's about the opportunity that, you know, that owning a pair of Yeezys might opt you into having conversations you wouldn't have otherwise. And if you can tell that story as a brand, I think you'll be successful in community building. Mm.
Good stuff.
I have, yeah, anyway, so again, half-baked, but I think it's important that we have those conversations. And I think you're right. We need to have other people on the show to talk about
it. Yeah, it is, since it's so foundational to like how the world works and how did, I think how the future of retailing and building brands is so tied up in this. I think we absolutely have to have someone on to talk about this.
Yeah. That's great. You want to wrap us up?
Yeah, I mean, Brian? We were trying to make this a 20-minute episode. no, we're never going to be able to do that. anyway, thanks for listening to Future Commerce. We always want feedback from you about today's show. So, if you can, maybe put a comment in the discuss comment box below on our website, or hit us up on LinkedIn or Twitter or wherever you want to engage with us. Hit us up on email, Brian. At futurecommerce.com and or .fm and
.fm
and Philip at futurecommerce.fm. Also, don't forget to subscribe if you're not already. Subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or just really listen from anywhere that you can find us. We're pretty much everywhere. We're on Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, or Apple Podcasts, and any smart speaker. Just say Alexa, play Future Commerce Podcast, and you can find us there. So don't miss an episode. Woo. Do not miss an episode.
Wow. Awesome.
Retail tech is moving fast.
And Future Commerce is moving faster.
Thanks
for listening.